All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I feel like you've been off on journeys.
Oh my gosh, so much has happened since I last talked to you. talked to you?
Yeah.
We have lots to cover.
Let's get into it. So first of all, where have you been that you're sending me pictures of like bison?
I am in Rapid City, South Dakota, because Josh is the Air Force base in South Dakota deployed to all over the place. I imagine things going on in the Ukraine. He is covering for the firefighters there. So he is there working. And I said, you've been gone already for like 6 months. I'm coming with you. So we got extremely lucky. We're basically staying in like an apartment. And I couldn't tell anyone where we were going because we cannot tell our travel plans until we already arrived. So
fair. I love all your pictures. I mean, I knew you must have been traveling or staying somewhere that had like a lot of that natural, like national forest vibe. The pictures all look so pretty.
Once we got here and we had sort of moved in, I was like, all right, we have a couple days. What do you want to do? We just started looking up day trips because there's Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska. I was like, I've never been to Yellowstone. I've never been to Custer. I've never been to like all these like crazy places. And there's this place called the Wildlife Loop. And so we bought a pass. It was like a donation, $30 for the year. Why not? I'll come back here. There's several different entrances. And I was like, okay, just pick one and we'll just do like a day trip. Apparently there was like wildfires a year or two ago. So there was a ton of devastation still, not a lot of regrowth. So it was kind of creepy, kind of cool, kind of crazy looking. And then all of a sudden, there's just bison, buffalo, I don't know what you would call them. And they're just chilling. Like there would be one. And I was like, that's magnificent. And he was like a mile away and I'm like taking pictures. And then we go around a bend and they're just like in the middle of the road. And I was like, awesome. Well, I guess we're here until they move because we're not going to win this fight.
Nope.
And there were a couple other cars there, too. Someone brought their Dodge Charger muscle car and they immediately backed up and left. Like,
why
I don't know
why
you
that car?
This car.
What a nature drive.
Yeah, there were a couple other cars who were like doing the same kind of road trip we were. I mean, they just kind of just walked right up and were like looking in the car. And I wanted to roll down my window so bad and like scratch their head because to me, it's just like a baby cow. And Josh was like locking the windows like, do not touch the wildlife. And I'm like, but they're so cute. Our car became a salt lick because of all the salt on the roads. And everyone's car in the middle of the road became just giant salt licks. And the buffalo just came from all over the place. And they were licking our cars clean. We got a free car wash. It was so funny. I had no, That's we were hilarious. Like, what do we do? What do we do? I have no idea.
No, don't move. Wait till they leave. You're done for now. That's it. Yeah.
So, I mean, wow. It started to clear up a little bit. And a few miles further down the road, it was like the mama and the baby calves. And they were adorable. And the calves, some of them were just laying on the side of the road, just chilling, sunning themselves. And if I were to stop and open my car door, I would have hit them. They just could care
right
less
there.
They're right there. It was the coolest thing. And there was, of course, a lot of other wildlife stuff, but it was much further away. But I just thought it was so cool seeing, like, you know, all the babies.
Yeah. I love it. I love looking at animals, all animals. I don't care what kind, unless it's the spiders that are going to balloon down to the East Coast. It looks beautiful. I would love to visit South Dakota one day. It looks so pristine. And I'm glad that the animals were able to get so close. I don't know if you ever went when you lived around here. Do you remember when Six Flags here in Jersey, the Six Flags Great Adventure, used to have like the safari drive-through?
So I've been to the Six Flags there, but I never did the safari drive-through.
Okay, because it used to be, you know, throwback to the 90s. It used to be like a free-for-all. Basically, you paid for your car, whatever it was, $10, and then you drove through and the animals were everywhere. They would jump on your car. They would, especially the baboons. The baboons were wild. And you weren't supposed to like feed them or open the windows. But, you know, of course, people did. Ruined it for the rest of us. Yeah. And I think some of the cars might have gotten damaged. And you know how people are dumb. So nowadays, I don't even know if it's still open, but maybe like 5 years ago, the last time I went, we went through and it was so disappointing. Like there was no animals anywhere. Any animals you saw were behind a fence. So not only are you in your car, but they're like in a fence, like a half mile away from your car. So they can't even get up to your car anymore. Yeah. So it was like really disappointing. Because I'm like you, I want to get all up and close and personal with animals.
For sure.
That is hilarious. I don't, like I said, I don't even know if it's open anymore. I would think not, just because of how people are.
New Jersey's wild. Like they had that insane water park also that were
the one that they featured on True Crime Obsessed, the Action Park. It's still there. I've been there and it's ghetto. It's like the discounted version of a water park. Because like we're big water park people in the summer. I take the kids a lot out to like the Poconos where they have Camel Beach and Great Wolf and Kalahari. And then, you know, I saw an ad for Mountain Creek on a billboard or something. I had not seen that documentary. I don't even think was out yet about what it used to be. But if you go there today, you will see many of the same rides that caused problems before, only slightly modified, still there today. Extremely dangerous. They still basically have, I'm going to put rides in quotations, but basically you line up to jump off of a cliff into water. No lifeguards anywhere. People swimming all underneath you. Gave me so much anxiety. It was crazy.
One of the like water slides, you would be going down and one of the curves was like such a tight curve that you would go around it so high that people would like go off the edge, you know?
That's not funny. It's not funny, but it's funny.
And you see other people ahead of you flying off the water slide, but yet you still go. I don't understand. I don't know.
I think maybe twice in my whole life, I've been online for a ride and saw something ahead of me that made me like, nope, just bounced right out of there. Not typical. That place, it was like every time we walked up to a ride, I'm like, maybe not this one. Maybe not this one. Everybody's dirty. It was just like, ew, no more, never again, never going back to Mountain Creek. No, thank you. And then, you know, the documentary came out and I was like, okay, yeah, let's not die there.
I have like a recovered memory when you said the rides where you're like, there's only a couple that you noped right out of there. Do you know the ride where it's like a kid ride and it literally just, you sit on it and it goes in a circle up and down? Knott's Camp Snoopy at the Mall of America had one of these rides and I never went on it because I was like too cool because I was just a little bit older. It was a ride for my little brother. So, of course, I would never be seen on this ride. And apparently there was like a period of time we didn't go for a couple years when I was really little. Some kid with like really long hair got their hair stuck and it ripped out all of her hair.
Oh, my God. That's awful. Sorry, lady, whoever you are, wherever you are, that must have hurt so much. And imagine waiting for it to grow back in. Oh, I hope it, they like, sued them to high heaven. She's alive. Did she live? Did she live? I'm making assumptions.
I want to say, no, she didn't. But I mean, I don't know. I was a kid when it happened and I didn't ask follow up questions. I just remember like, that's the ride it happened on. And then we were like, oh, fuck.
That's crazy. Yeah. The older I get, the less safe rides look. Maybe I'm just feeling my mortality, but I'm just like looking at some things thinking, how did I ride that? Like, why did I ride that? Even, I don't know if I sent you the video on TikTok, the woman, she's like a Gen Xer, maybe even older. And she's talking about the playground equipment that we had back in the day.
Oh yeah.
Maples and those hot metal slides that were like 50 feet high with no guardrails and those spinny things that you just used to spin until somebody got flung off and you hope you didn't get a concussion. And it's like, what were people thinking was safe for children? Where are these engineers now? That's what I want to know.
I did see a couple of hers. Do you remember Skip It? Like the old school, like the real Skip It ones. I had one of those. Those were like, I think I have actual ankle. I have like weak ankles because of that.
Because of Skip It.
Because of Skip It.
Skip It was dangerous. You could trip yourself. You could literally make yourself fall. It was just a disaster. Forget about if there's other kids near you.
It was like a little cannonball that you're swinging around that if you whacked into someone else's ankle, it would be like...
Ooh, hurt so much. Hurt so much. Yeah, we had some crazy toys. I can't.
Yeah, that's fucked up. Oh, God. Memories.
Yeah. Anyway, I am, despite the earth coming to an end, I'm actually having a good month. And I want to say thank you because I'm sure that it's because I remembered to say rabbit, rabbit, first thing on time at midnight.
Ooh, that's amazing. Oh,
I feel safe. I do. I'm walking around with a sense of invincibility. It's dangerous. Nothing can hurt me now. I said rabbit, rabbit. I'm good.
It's like a false sense of security. It's like, all right, nothing bad can happen.
Nothing's going to touch me.
Yeah.
Are you ready for me to tell you a story? Okay.
I'm so ready.
Get comfy. This one is a wild one. Today, I'm going to tell you the tale of the bedroom strangler.
What?
We're going to Canada. We're going to head over to, Ontario in the 1970s. Ontario, just by the way, is from an Iroquois word meaning beautiful water, which is very fitting because apparently there are 250,000 lakes in that province. That's a lot of water. And apparently also all five of the Great Lakes borders Ontario. So it seems like a nice place, but in the 1970s, they were very similar to America. People were going to drive-in movies, the roller skating rinks, everything is brown and orange, right? Cool. They were also experiencing what we were experiencing in the boom of serial killers. So that was not as cool, but let's get into it. Starting in 1973, there was a series of deaths, four, and they were all ruled either natural or accidental. And all four women were found in their beds. Let me tell you about them. We have 20-year-old Mary Hicks. She was found dead in October of 1973 in her second floor apartment. The police, they scoped out the scene. No signs of forced entry. The apartment is spotless, but she was on a couple of different prescription drugs, and they believed that she overdosed. Her roommate, who was living with her, they were in a two-bedroom. Her roommate woke up in the morning, couldn't get her to, come out of the room, went into the room to, wake her up, and found her tucked into her bed, all nice and neat, dead. So they thought, all right, she overdosed on her medication. That same month, a 42-year-old Alice Ralston, she was found dead, again, tucked into bed, no signs of forced entry. Everything is so clean. And they attributed that death to arteriosclerosis, which is basically like her arteries got hard. It's if you eat a lot of junk food and stuff. So they said it was natural. It's just bad circulation. Then in March in 1974, so in the springtime, 27-year-old Eleanor Hartwick was found dead. This time, the death was ruled as a reaction. some places described it as an allergic reaction. So I don't know how the coroner exactly worded it, but they said as a reaction to her prescription medications. She was also found tucked into bed. She even had an open book by her side as if she had fallen asleep while reading. She looked fine. Nothing looks untowards. Nothing, no marks on the bodies, nothing. So, you know, of course, they're not going to see that as suspicious. I mean, a little weird. Seems like what?
To me, like, all tucked in with a book. I don't know. It seems.
I know. For me, I'm a messy sleeper. I wake up, my sheets are tossed off the bed, my pillow's the other side of the room. But I guess some people sleep very neatly.
Yeah. And, I know. I'm a messy sleeper too. Like,
yeah, like if you find me, you should find me with one arm hanging off the bed, my face in the pillow, my hair's everywhere. Like, yeah. If I'm tucked in, something's wrong.
That I've got like two water bottles. There's a cat.
Absolutely. All of these women had spotless apartments. And then the fourth of this group, 49-year-old Doris Brown. She was found dead in August of that year, and she was thought to have died from pulmonary edema. And that's when the lungs become filled with fluid. And it's most likely because your heart's not functioning correctly. Side note, do you know what else can cause pulmonary edema?
Strangulation.
Yeah. Doris, also called Dottie, was a mother of five. She had recently separated from her husband and had moved into an apartment building with her two youngest children. Her youngest daughter was away on the night that she died. Her daughter was at a sleepover. And her other daughter, her 16-year-old daughter, was in the house with her. And they had planned to wake up the next morning and go to get the driver's license because it was her daughter's birthday. Her 16th birthday. And so she woke up very late the next morning and immediately felt sick because she was like, why is it so late? Why didn't mom wake me up? Why don't I hear anything? It was so unusual. And then, of course, she went into the bedroom and found her mom dead.
Boo.
Yeah. So none of these women died of natural causes. However, it's understandable that the police didn't recognize a pattern due to the fact that there's no signs of foul play, no signs of forced entry. In some of these deaths, they went so far as do autopsies or interview some people, but it's, for all intents and purposes, just looked natural. And also, these women all lived in high-rise apartment buildings.
I'm assuming they're all single women?
Well, no. I mean, single so far. The four that I've talked about were single in that they weren't together with a spouse or a partner. But, you know, the one lived with her roommate. The last one, Miss Brown, had her daughter in the other room.
Yeah.
So they had other people in the house at the time.
Okay.
So, okay. Stephanie.
Yeah.
If you lived on the 15th floor of a building, do you think that you would be worried about locking your windows or balcony door?
No.
Right?
Not at all.
I mean, I'll be honest, I was never worried about it. I used to live on the 17th floor in a building. I never thought about it, but sure as fuck, I am going to be worried now. I went around after I researched this story to lock every window on my second floor. Because
my mom was on the 8th floor and she leaves her patio door like wide open for like the entire day.
No, after this story, you're going to call her and tell her to close it and lock it. Because what police did not realize is that someone was scaling the outside of the building and climbing into unlocked windows and balconies.
Whoa.
Let's talk about it. We're going to go to New Year's Eve of 1974. So we're right about to start a new year, 1975. And we have 23-year-old Diane Bates. She had been out the night before and she was over the moon because her boyfriend had just proposed to her that night.
That's so cute.
Yes. And so they're all happy. They're great. He leaves the next morning for work. Okay. I love you. I'll see you later. They had plans to go out later that evening.
Mm-hmm.
When her boyfriend, James Britton, came home from work, he found the apartment dark and quiet. This is like after 6 o'clock. But Diane was supposed to have already been home and should have been getting ready to go out.
Yeah.
He's calling out to her, but it's silent. And also, where's the cat? Okay.
Oh, that's a creepy silent. When it's
yes.
Like
when you can't even hear your pet coming.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, where is everybody? Like, okay, maybe she's asleep or something. But your animal, usually, even if they're napping, will perk up if they hear their name. He doesn't.
You'll hear like the running down the hallway at least or something.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. This was not the case. When he walked into the bedroom, he sees there's a whole pile of blankets on top of the bed. So Ooh. Already bad. He okay. pulls all the blankets off and he finds her. She's dead. Her hands have been tied behind her back with pantyhose. She's been strangled with her bra, which is still around her neck. And there's a pillow over her face.
So this is killer. New.
Yes. This is going to be the first time police realize something's not right. The other four deaths, no alarm bells. They weren't linked until much later in the case. You'll see. Okay. So this is brand new. They have not heard about this sort of situation at all. The killer had raped her after she was dead. Ooh. And the cat was found hiding underneath the bed. She didn't come out for 2 days. She refused. She was traumatized. Like, would not come out for anything. Because she was probably hiding under there the whole time.
Poor thing.
Yeah. So the police, of course, they jump into this investigation and they get, they're interviewing people in the building. They get a tip about a dark Buick that had been parked behind the apartment building looking sus. And they put out a $5,000 reward, that's pretty good for 1975. Yeah. $5,000 to any clue that would lead to the arrest. But the police got no further. They interviewed 200 people and the case went
cold.
That's a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't find anything. The apartment is spotless. No fingerprints, no hair, nothing anywhere. And for a while, everything goes silent until 1977. Okay, so 2 years later, there's another hit in the case. But just in case anyone's wondering, that time that was, quote unquote, quiet, the perpetrator was not gone. He was not in jail or sent, into the army or anything like that. He had been assaulting 11 other women. It's just that they didn't die. 11. Yes. All 11 of them either... Well, I'll get into it. He didn't actually even assault all 11, but could sometimes just break into the apartments and they caught him in the apartment or would wake up to find him in the apartment. Huh. So those 11 women are alive. Imagine you're in bed. You're comfy. Your door is locked. You live in a building, security downstairs. And then at some point in the night, you wake up and you find somebody watching you sleep.
That's like my biggest fear.
just watching you. Ooh. And sometimes that person had been watching you for hours and you didn't even know it.
Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and you're like, what the fuck is that? And you're like, oh, that's my robe hanging on the door or something.
It's my sweater hanging over a chair. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Horrifying.
Yeah.
Sometimes the intruder would leave before the woman woke up, but she would find that her bedroom, her things had been rearranged. Can you imagine? That's almost worse because you wonder if you're going crazy, right? You wake up and you're like, hold on a minute. Like, who organized like these piles of clothes or who moved my jewelry or who that would just that would haunt you. It would haunt you.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, I feel like if it happened to an older person, where they're like, oh, you're just getting older, mom. Like, don't worry about it. Just go to bed, mom. And she's like, no, I'm telling you, something's not right. And they're like, just go to bed, mom. You'll be fine.
Absolutely. I feel like a lot of people would like poo-poo that sort of thing. Like, oh, come on. Like, you must have moved it yourself. Maybe you were half asleep. You don't remember. You're under a lot of stress, or you're a new mom, or you work a lot. And like, you start wondering to yourself, maybe it was me. Maybe I did move it. But like, you know, you just know.
Yeah.
Sometimes the women would wake up and they'd find him watching them sleep, but he would run out of the apartment. And then some of those times he would sexually assault them. And a couple of them, he strangled them, but not to the point of death. Like, they would pass out. I don't know if he thought they were dead or if he didn't care as long as they were unconscious, but he left it at that. Until the spring of 1977, when the killings start again. Oh, now we have 23-year-old Lula George. She lives on the fourth floor in an apartment building, and she was raped and strangled to death in her bed. When the next day she didn't show up to work, her coworker came looking for her, and that's when they found her body.
Aww.
After the attack, he had made the bed.
That's weird.
This time, I don't know if the door had been left open a little bit or what clued them off, but they realized that the attacker had climbed in, like, from the outside of the building. Like a bad like a spider
washer or something? Like, how does he do that?
Mm-hmm. You'll see.
Okay.
So that was in the spring. So we go to July 1977. 22-year-old Donna Fledboom didn't show up for work. Police were called. They find her, the police break in. They find her in bed, naked. The killer had washed her and then tucked her back into bed before leaving. He had been there for hours, and they knew this because anybody who knew Donna apparently said that, like, she had plenty of shit going on. That apartment wasn't, like, the tidiest. This apartment was scrubbed clean, and all the towels that he had used to bathe and dry her, he had gone and washed them downstairs in the communal laundry room.
He's got, like, everything he does is, like, kind of different each time. Like, he decides what to do each time he's there. It's kind of weird.
Yes, right? He's definitely, like, he's has these, like, stops and starts and, like, evolves from just, I'm sure that before any of these cases, I'm sure there's still others where he just broke in just to break in. You know how these things start.
Yeah.
He started off with the little things and then it escalates, and then he was starting to get more into the ritual of it with the washing of the body. However, washing those towels in the communal laundry room was what really put the police back on the right track, because they correctly concluded that someone would have had to have been A, familiar with the building layout. Number two, very comfortable being there, that somebody wouldn't ask him, who are you or what are you doing here? And so they decided to obtain a list of all the tenants in the building. And there was one name that was also on a list of previous tenants in the building where Lula was killed. And that name is Russell Maurice Johnson. Let me tell you about this asshole. Russell Johnson is a 30-year-old white male. He was an assembly worker at a Ford plant. He had been previously married with a son, but had since moved out and been living on his own. He spent nearly all his time at the gym bodybuilding. This guy was built. He actually would moonlight sometimes as a bouncer for local clubs. So he was exceptionally strong.
Oh, yeah.
His car matched the description of the car seen behind Diane Bates' apartment building. And he physically matched the descriptions that they had gotten from those women who had woken up and found him in their room where he had gotten away. So police take him into custody. 22 hours later, Russell's crying like a baby. He confesses not only to the murders, the three that the police were aware of, but at that time just went ahead and confessed to the other four murders that they believe the women had died naturally or accidentally. He described how he climbed from balcony to balcony of these buildings with his arms. Okay, like rock climbing. And he would go from balcony to balcony, window ledge to window ledge, looking for one that was unlocked. He confessed that with the... He confessed that with the last murder, he had climbed into bed with the victim and was just calmly watching her sleep, quote. But when she woke up and she started struggling, he killed her. Russell explained that he didn't want her to be mad at him, so that's why he washed her before putting her back into bed.
What a weird frame of thinking.
Yes. And he stated, like, the police didn't even bring it up, but he made sure to state that he never left the apartments of the women he killed without cleaning them. And this was not to remove evidence. Number one, he has OCD, but that aside, he said it's because he didn't want them to be mad at him. And that's why he would scrub down their apartments.
He's got like a weird wires crossed. I don't know, like a weird complex.
So weird. I mean, we've seen it in other serial killers, right? Like they kill the victim and then they cover the face or they wash the body or whatever. But this guy cleaned the apartment, like washed dishes, changed the cat litter. Like,
come to my apartment.
For some reason, I mean, I think you could probably find some people who'd be better.
Damn.
So he confessed, he said that he started his crimes around 22 years old and that at first he was just breaking into apartments, stealing women's underwear. And actually in 1969, he checked himself into a psychiatric hospital because he realized like something's very, very wrong with me. Yeah. And well, he was diagnosed. Yeah. And they did diagnose him as a sexual deviant. However, he checked himself out a week later. Yay for the 70s.
Okay.
The official court psychiatrist would later diagnose him as having schizophrenia, OCD, also fetishism, sadism, voyeurism, and necrophilia. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Russell Johnson was found not guilty by reason of insanity.
How... Yeah. That's like,
they said that he did not, that he had a severe complex, a guilt complex, and would cry about the things he had done and about how he didn't always know what was right and what was wrong and that he would black out during certain episodes. And how much of that is true? I don't know. Like, is he really crazy? He had a job, a stable job, you know, went to the gym, fed himself, paid his bills. So how crazy can you be? But that's what the jury said. And today he is in a maximum security psychiatric facility with only men and without the possibility of parole. So they at least did that. They said, you are never getting out.
Well,
every year, he applies for more lenient accommodations. So he asks for like more things to have in his cell, a nicer cell, a private cell, more outside time. And recently, he requested to be transferred to a medium security facility that houses both men and women.
No.
Right? Just no.
What are you thinking, Russell?
This is why I think, how crazy can you be if you're asking for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He is chemically castrated, and he is given, he's on what's called Lupron, which is an injection that you get every few months, and it effectively, like, kills his libido. So he's also asked for day trips, walks beyond the grounds of the prison, etc. Like, always asking for more, something more lenient.
He wants freedom is what he wants. And
right?
He doesn't understand he's in prison.
Right. He's trying any angle he can. But at every single one of these hearings, so every year, like the sickest family tradition you could ever think of, the family members of the victims drive from all over the place, some of them from really far away, and they go once a year so that they can sit in that room and make sure that the victims are remembered and so that the panels, the boards can remember how many people he hurt.
Hmm.
I read interviews from these family members and articles that they had written. And it's very clear that the pain he inflicted is still very much being felt. It is not forgotten. The sister of one victim said, "I will come every single time. And when I can't do it anymore, my sons will come in my place."
Wow.
A niece of Diane Brown, who they called Dottie, that was the mother of five, she said, "We need to make sure this is not forgotten. These victims still have families who love them." Russell, on the other hand, is a trash human who at the hearing recently said, "These people should stop living in the past. I have gotten on with my life. Why can't they?"
He is insane.
Yeah. And that's the story of the building scaling brute that I hope dies painfully. He said, I don't know why I didn't write this somewhere, but one thing I found so interesting is he at one point stated that the highest he had ever free climbed was 15 stories up. And that on that particular climb, he couldn't find anything open. And so that was like a bum day. He just ended up having to climb back down.
Good.
Climbing up buildings? What is this?
No one saw him from outside. But I mean, like,
I don't think I would be able to see.
Yeah, in the dark or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, how often are people outside the apartment staring up? And, you know, you have different sides to the apartment. And if it's the part that's facing, like, the back parking lot, or maybe, like, mm-hmm. some buildings, like, the back is where they, like, in my old apartment, the back was all fenced in, and it was where they had, like, the pool facility. And,
yeah.
like, if you looked out there, you would just be looking down at space where either, whether the pool was open or closed, like, There wasn't going to be at night anyone hanging out down there behind a locked fence just staring up at the building. You know what I mean? But there was ways you could get past that fence and climb the building on that side where you wouldn't be seeing. Buildings that are on like cliffs or corners where they're like facing out for the, you know, the view. Okay, your Manhattan view, nobody's looking at your side of the building. Sorry.
Right.
It's nobody's watching you. Because how would you see that side of the building?
Yeah.
So, no one ever reported actually like seeing, oh, you know, come quick, there's a man like climbing balconies. But this is how he did it. Oh, and he did say it, like at one point, he started carrying around like a card to like jimmy the locks if he found one that he wanted to get into and he couldn't. I guess he didn't want to keep climbing all those stories for nothing. And he said that it was too easy to break in, and that if people didn't want to get hurt, why did they make it so easy?
Part of me is like, fuck you. But also part of me is like, true.
I mean, we don't want a victim blame, right? Because,
yeah.
But besides that, who could imagine 15 stories up, two stories up, that someone's going to get into your place? And that's where, like, when he would make these comments, that's where I got the real sense of, I don't really think you're that crazy. Because if you were, you wouldn't be thinking about, like, I don't know, it just seems so devious. Like, he definitely had a process and then kept developing that process to better serve him.
Yeah, I think so, he's just... I don't know what the right word is.
I looked everywhere. There's nothing about his early life. Nothing. I found one little blurb about he maybe had been sexually assaulted as a teen, but nowhere was that something that he confirmed and spoke about. It was something that it's like I just saw mentioned in a few places. Beyond that, nothing about his parents, how he grew up, zippo. So don't know what kind of trauma he had in his youth. And it may be, I mean, as evidenced by his schizophrenia and the OCD and the, oh, they're going to get mad at me. Like, okay, you're definitely got some cuckoo going on. Does that mean that you shouldn't have just gone to jail? I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't that jury. But to me, it doesn't sound all out as crazy as some other killers. Just there's just like a touch of too much cognizance there for me.
Yeah, it seems like he definitely has his wires crossed somewhere where he is worried about people being mad at him, even though that they're like dead. But
yeah.
He's cognizant enough to realize to like make a plan and develop it and follow through from A to B or from A to Z rather. So
yes,
he can't be absolutely. And like get a job and like do and go work out and keep a job or freelance. So
yeah, and really you had a car.
Yeah.
You have a car. You've got a driver's license. Like you don't seem like the type you're just walking around talking to yourself.
Yeah.
And he doesn't ever, like, and at least in anything that I could, you know, research, nothing about hearing voices telling him to do it or anything like that. So I think he got off a little easy. I really hope that the boards that continue to listen at these hearings do not continue to give him more and more goodies, because what's the point? What's the point? I mean, all these people dead.
Castrated. And I didn't know that they could give him a shot that like messes with their libido. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's basically got like no testosterone going on in his body right now. So this is debatable, okay, with medications and chemical castration. Could he get it up and assault another person? Likely not. Is it impossible? I don't know about that, because depending on, you know, he's a big guy. I don't know at what point, you know. Yes, absolutely. Right. So... And like different family members had said in the hearings, like, it's not enough that two guards go walking with him. I could see him taking over two guards, like no problem. So I think this guy should be kept under really harsh restrictions. Let's not reward someone who's killed seven women and assaulted countless others, including the 11 that he confessed to. So.
Well, yeah, the seven women that he killed I mean, they're not out enjoying extra hours of sunlight and the general population or having cell phones or internet time. So why are you asking for it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because he said, you know, he said, get on with your life. Yeah. That was his answer. Piece of shit. Yeah. Definitely fuck you.
Get on with definitely your life.
Definitely fuck you. Yes.
The lower testosterone, I wonder if that causes depression, which could cause anger, which could cause more violence. And so if he was released with like more people, if that would cause more issues. I'm not a doctor. I would just play one on TV.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So just from the National Library of Medicine, they did a study in 2019 about using Lupron in the management of high-risk sex offenders. And when they gave it to subjects, in addition to the other therapies that they're supposed to be having while they're incarcerated, compared to untreated offenders, did show like they are significantly less, like it's like you don't have the energy. The Lupron, in addition with the chemical castration, like all those medicines is basically just going to not give you any drive. So you could be, you could be mad, but I don't think you'll get like a Hulk response.
Okay. So it, I don't know the, like zaps them of that urge. I don't know the right word to say it, but I understand. I don't know how to describe it, but I get it. If that's anything.
Yeah. So that's that. Call everybody you know, guys. Lock your balconies, lock your doors, lock your windows. This is 2022. You cannot leave anything unlocked. Do not leave your car unlocked. Do not leave your locker unlocked. Do not leave your bicycle unlocked. Everything has to be on the lockdown. Everything.
When you are walking from like Chipotle into your car, lock your car right away before you start your car. Don't just dilly-dally on your phone before you start your car. Lock your car.
Yes. You don't want to linger in parking lots. And I know that it can seem really weird if it's like the middle of the day and it's crowded, but it happens. It happens. In 1 second, somebody will say, excuse me, did you drop this? And that's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. So walk with your keys in between your knuckles, guys. Well, if you don't have a car with a push button start, in which case the keys are like useless now. You can't win. Just don't leave anything unlocked. We are past the point where we can assume we are safe in any environment at all. Mm-hmm. We're not safe from the spiders raining from the sky. We're not safe from people who are going to climb buildings to the fourth floor to get into your apartment. It's just not safe anymore, anywhere.
No one is safe. Nothing is safe. Nothing. Everyone wear your helmet.
I feel like we got to go out with like special hazmat suits for the nuclear fallout, the spiders. And then like maybe there could be a button on the suit that I could just tap in case I'm attacked that will like call 911, kind of like a life alert. That's the suit somebody needs to make. I could just put that on when I go out. Okay, my dear. Well, thank you for your stories of wonderful South Dakota. I'm glad that you're settled in. Yeah. And I will talk to you soon.
Alrighty. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Everyone, I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message,
tilldeathdouspart@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, tilldeathdouspartpodcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, definitely like, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.